Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mrs. Vi's underground lair. Today I have gathered here before me the world's deadliest and most knowledgeable security professionals. Returning to the show is my sometime collaborator in naughtiness, Joe the Mastermind Klein, subject matter expert in IPv6 and the Internet of Things. He is known for famously hacking the coffee machine at Starbucks, having it swap caffeinated coffee for decaf, thereby overwhelming the DC metro area with grumpy insomniacs. I would also like to introduce SCADA expert and host of the Unsolicited Response podcast, Dale Peterson, a.k.a. Bond, Digital Bond. Additionally, we have Bob, not a Dr. Radvanovsky, author of multiple books on the topic of critical infrastructure protection. Yet even with such massive brain power concentrated in one area, all of us continue to struggle with the issue of SCADA ICS infrastructure protection. That makes me angry. And when Mrs. Y gets angry, Mr. Farrow gets upset. And when Mr. Farrow gets upset, tomorrow never dies. Unicorns die. Humankind has climbed Mount Everest, gone to the bottom of the ocean, fired Nerf rockets at office co-workers on the moon, split the atom in grilled cheese sandwiches, achieved miracles in every field of human endeavor except SCADA and ICS security. I am truly disappointed, and before I descend further into a Teutonic depression consistent with this ridiculous accent, I suggest we begin the discussion for your eyes only. Thank you. Yes, we're here to begin a talk with about SCADA, ICS, and CIP, or critical infrastructure protection. We have some wonderful guests today. We have, of course, my favorite, Joe Klein. Joe, take a bow. Introduce yourself. We also have Dale Peterson. Dale, why don't you introduce yourself for our audience?
Sure. I'm Dale Peterson, work with Digital Bond. It's a control system security consulting and research practice. So we've been working on this for about 10 years and do research for DHS, DOE, and others. If you see SCADA IDS signatures in Cisco or Juniper, those are ours. If you see SCADA plugins in Nessus, those are ours. So we've kind of been focused on this for quite a while and quite a bit frustrated that we haven't made more progress.
And we also have Bob Radvanovsky. Bob, introduce yourself for the audience.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Bob Radvanovsky. I'm a published author on several books involving critical infrastructure protection and assurance. I've been involved with the SCADA and SCADA security community for the past roughly 15 years. I am kind of indirectly associated with Dale. Dale and I are both in the same community. I have started and hosted a mailing list server called SCADASec back in 2008, actually. February 3rd will be our fifth year, and it is the world's longest going SCADA security mailing list in the world. It is an open public forum. We do a number of grassroots projects, of which our most current project that we've also worked with Dale and a few other researchers involving finding open internet SCADA systems that are directly connected to the internet, and we have been working closely with DHS on this.
And of course we have Ethan Banks, co-host of Packet Pushers, and I'm always happy to have Ethan here.
Hi, Michelle. Nice to be on today in this snowy day up here in New Hampshire. And this is another one of those shows. It's kind of like, ooh, you got some really cool and interesting people on that are going to teach me some stuff, because my knowledge of SCADA is pretty limited. It goes back to the day when I did work for a state government, and there was a wastewater treatment plant that ran on a whole lot of SCADA equipment that I could see, but had very little to do with managing other than we needed to keep the rest of the world away from it was about the limit of my knowledge and realm of responsibility. So these guys that are right into it should be providing a lot of information that I'm looking forward to hearing.
Well, you're doing better than me, because I think the closest I've ever gotten to anything, any type of system like that, was when I was at the university. We had our facilities group had a computerized system, you know, for managing everything. And we weren't allowed to touch it. So, which I think that's usually the case with a lot of these systems, is that the IT people and the networking people don't actually get direct contact with it. But, you know, first, it might be a good idea before we dive in completely is maybe we can get some definitions cleared up here, because I find that probably the most confusing thing. Whenever I read these security articles, I have to look up everything so that I understand the differences between SCADA, ICS, PLC, DCS. So maybe Bob, you and Dale can, and Joe can sort of go into what all of these, the differences between all of these acronyms are.
Sure. If you guys don't mind, I'll kind of take the ball on this and see if you guys are in agreement with this. SCADA is a subset definition to industrial control systems. Distributed control systems are another subset, as are also programmable logic controllers. PLCs are probably the dumbest and simplest of industrial control systems out there. They tend to do and perform unitary functions. They can perform multiple functions, but usually they're very limited as to what they can perform. SCADA systems are much more intelligent, henceforth why they're titled with the word supervisory control. One of the terms that you might have started hearing recently is the use of operations technology, and a lot of folks have started to incorporate this term for these subsets such as SCADA, DCS, PLCs, whatnot. One other term that you left out was RTU, which is remote telemetry units. The difference between RTUs and PLCs is PLCs operate on a one-to-one basis. RTUs operate on a master-slave relationship, where you have a master device that controls and regulates multiple slaves, one or more slaves devices, usually in a distributed configuration environment. The term SCADA is often nebulously used by folks outside of this community based upon the fact that it's easy to remember, easy to understand. Most folks within the political arenas tend to use the word SCADA, now also interchangeably utilizing the term cyber in addition to SCADA security. And as a result, it's caused a little bit of confusion both within the SCADA security community and those outside or adjacent to this community.
You Dale, said cyber. Is this time to drink? Sorry.
I said cyber, not cider.
No, it's a thing. Joe hates the term cyber anything, so it's like a drinking thing for him. It's a little early in the day for maybe for me, but and maybe Ethan, but go ahead.
Well, maybe I'll jump in if it's okay. I think Bob is dead on that, but maybe with just a little twist. First of all, kind of implied is that these systems we're talking about, whatever term you use, are controlling and monitoring a physical process. Sometimes a very important physical process, like the power grid or a chemical plant, and something, maybe a small building control system or a crematorium system. So they're all over the place.
So what's the term that we should be using when we talk about it? What's the mass? Should we be saying ICS, industrial control system, when we talk about any of these?
Yeah, I would say ICS is probably the term most people are moving to. But the terminology, again, it's just that part I don't think is as important as people understanding that there's two parts to these systems, whatever you call them usually. There's a part that's running on a typical server or workstation running Windows or Unix, and that's what's in the control room that the operators are running an operator station or an HMI, human-machine interface, controlling the process. There are historians running on servers that are capturing or recording all the data. There might be real-time servers and other servers with databases and things on that. So you have your kind of standard thing that the IT world understands. And then on the other side, there's these field devices that are actually connected to sensors and actuators. So they're the things that are doing the measurements or actually causing things to change. And those could be PLCs, RTUs, PACs, IEDs, all sorts of acronyms. But basically, you have servers and workstations, and then you have these field devices. And that would be true in most of the systems, unless you just have a real simple system with a PLC and a little panel or display. But almost all of them, whatever you call them, are based on the same thing. A lot of them, with different names, use the same protocols or even the same applications.
And each component in this system, in this complete system, is an area for attack.
It is. And if I could just filibuster for one more second, because one of the things that I think people should really focus on is not so much the term of whether it's a SCADA or a DCS, but what is it controlling or monitoring? Because that's where the security impact varies a great deal. For example, electricity moves really fast. So it's much more time sensitive in terms of if it's being attacked, as opposed to a water canal where water only flows at a certain rate. Or a leak detection system on a pipeline is extremely important to be available because you have to shut down the pipeline if you don't know if it's leaking. But a SCADA system that's monitoring, let's say, natural gas meters isn't critical if it's offline because you only do billing once a month.
Well, you just freaked me out a second ago when you mentioned crematoriums. I didn't even consider, maybe I'm just completely out of touch, but I didn't even think about those being on any kind of industrial control system.
Well, they're used every place.
Yeah, I you know.
That requires automation. SCADA and industrial control systems are used for traffic flow monitoring systems, traffic lights. The recent one is Caterpillar. They have these sensors that monitor these really big mining trucks. You send the data out one way that tells what the load is on the truck, how fast the truck is going, if there's any components that are broken down on the vehicle, to other things like air traffic sensors. Anything that can be automated is.
Hey, Joe, do you think it's fair to say that SCADA and ICS is where ERP hacking was a few years ago? Remember how everybody just sort of discovered ERP, you know, and then that was like really a big deal for a while. And then these guys started to get their act together a bit. Is that now what's happening with these industrial control systems? Do you think that's fair?
Well, yeah, I'm actually monitoring a lot of different discussions from the hacker, the underground community discussing this. And it's interesting that as of actually 2 days ago, Anonymous just received a copy of some Google Dorks and some additional searching engines. And basically, Anonymous is actually using these to identify and target specific systems. And that's essentially what we saw with the other systems, you know, 2-3 years ago. As soon as that was disclosed, we started seeing bad guys use that technology very quickly. So it's going to be an interesting couple months.
So, Bob, Dale, how does this fit in with the idea of the smart grid? And maybe this is a naive question, but it's, you know, you hear about the smart grid, and it's kind of a blanket term for an electrical grid that uses information and communications technology to gather and act on information. Is that just another fancy way of saying an ICS that's for utilities?
Dale, you want to take it first?
Well, I think that's fair. And we tend to, in the U.S., we tend to equate smart grid with smart meters too much. A lot of the smart grid technology that's having the biggest impact is on the distribution. So actually getting power from the big voltage lines out to people's houses and businesses. In the past, those SCADA systems were oftentimes just monitoring, just telling the electric utility when there was an outage. But now they're much more intelligent, and they're starting to get auto recovery and other things. So it is just another type of ICS. And again, the importance of it depends on what you're using it for. If it's, you know, monitoring people's usage for billing and online viewing of their electric usage, that might be less important than detecting large-scale outages. Although even that's not that important because you know when the power goes out, they get called. So, you know, some of these systems are maybe not as important from a security standpoint as others.
So how long have these ICS systems been in use? How many years would you say? 20?
50.
Wow.
SCADA was first invented specifically for the national power grid back in the 50s. And it was utilized in Upper New York State to control the what is now the Northeastern power grid. And it was in the mid to late 1950s. These large systems controlled multiple substations in that region and since then have branched out. So it has been around for a while. One of the protocols utilized, one thing that Dale failed to mention about is that many of these systems utilize archaic communications protocols. One of the oldest protocols is a communications protocol called Modbus. And Modbus was originally developed by a company now since been purchased by Schneider Electric called Telemecanique, which is a French-based, actually both companies are French-based organizations. Telemecanique back in the late 60s developed Modbus so that way they could communicate to these remote devices via serial connection. And it's a very simple communications protocol. Many of these devices back then were not network connected. It's only been within the past 5 or 10 years that many of these devices now include network connectivity where they can communicate Modbus over a Ethernet network. The SCADA systems of then utilized physical connectivity to these devices, and this is long before network connectivity ever emerged. Right, Dan?
Oh, yeah, sure. Exactly right, Bob. Sorry about that.
So are you saying that there are still, if I understand you right, that a lot of these technologies still utilize, I think it's Modbus, which is a serial type of connection, and they encapsulate it in IP. There isn't that much that's native IP right now. Do I understand that correctly?
There's an Ethernet version called Modbus/TCP, and literally is Modbus that is encapsulated and rides on top of Ethernet packets. There's also a standard traditional Modbus that goes via serial.
Yeah, I want to mention that. This is Joe Klein. One of the more interesting assessments I did was back in the 80s, was on the telephone infrastructure. And I found a lot in the region I was living in. I found a lot of Modbus dial-in modems without dial-back and without any permissions. And from what I can understand with a recent assessment against the dial-up infrastructure, there's still many of those systems that are exposed. They may not be via TCP, but there still is access via dial-up connections.
So, and that leads to a good question. Do you think, it sounds like there's a big disconnect for these guys, because they were using these archaic protocols and serial connectivity, that and now they're starting to use Ethernet. It reminds me of a discussion I've had with now they're starting to network. They're having these camera systems for that, like campus police. When I worked at the university, the campus police were switching from DVRs to IP cameras. And here these guys were making decisions about network devices and stuff, and they were not used to dealing with equipment and examining them and analyzing them in the way that a networking or a systems person or a security person even would make those assessments. I mean, do you think that's the root of this problem, that there's just that's they started out in a different way and there's a huge disconnect between these two communities?
I actually want to include something. It's something that I've been observing because I've been doing testing on a lot of different types of SCADA outside of just the ICS. I've been looking at automobile security and planes and trains and lots of other technology that exists, even satellite. And what I've noticed that a lot of people have implemented safety systems, which used to be physical safety systems. They've implemented them into microcontrollers, and because it sold very well from a vendor standpoint, there was a lot of implementation. Now we as security professionals are finding that these safety systems have been implemented in microcontrollers and, you know, poorly configured systems. That's really where the security exposure has been. It's pretty crazy, but it's every place. It's in all different systems. Yes, and it is in coffee machines too.
Great. Go ahead, Dale or Bob?
I actually have a comment that I would also like to make as well, in something that a lot of people have not understood. Prior to the year 2000, many of these devices were connected via direct private networked circuits utilizing either ISDN or frame relay networks or even dial-up. With the advent and the popularity of the internet exploding at the turn of the century, many of them have removed most of these older older communication systems and have supplicated them since then with DSL, satellite, or point-to-point wireless communications. And in lieu of modems or frame relay terminal adapters, they are now utilizing Ethernet to serial converters. I'm sure both Mr. Klein and Mr. Peterson can confirm this.
Yes.
We are seeing tens of thousands of these devices that are specifically used to connect these devices in remote locations for single or dual functions. Many of them are in the water sector for things like bilge pumps, river monitoring sensory equipment, tertiary functions that are not considered typically critical, but because many of these systems are tied into the same enterprise network as the rest of the water district, it poses a slight to medium risk to the water district because they're effectively part of the greater network.
So you're saying, so if I'm hearing what you're saying, then it used to be that a lot of this stuff was air-gapped.
Yes.
And now it's not air-gapped because, and they're connecting in. They're out of, just because of efficiency and ease of use, they're connecting them to DSL and maybe cable even, and this puts the entire infrastructure now at risk.
Yes, and many of these Ethernet serial converters don't have operating systems on them, and if they do, their operating systems are so small that they offer very little to no security on them whatsoever. Some may offer SSH connectivity, but by default, how you typically connect to these devices is via an unsecured telnet session or an FTP session that utilizes an anonymous FTP where you can upload or download files that are being extrapolated via the device from the machines. Oh, I hear the snickering. Don't laugh. It exists.
It's a little depressing. So it was an existential angst ridden kind of laugh because I'm depressed now.
No, that was exactly my experience in the one SCADA environment that I dealt with, is exactly what you were describing. The SCADA units had an Ethernet connection, IP, and very simplistic interface, which my memory, we're going back quite a ways now, but my memory is it was Telnet. And the security that we implemented was simply segment them off into a unique VLAN and then access list, limit who can get in and out of the SCADA network, which was, again, VLAN, very rudimentary protection for this, because the devices had to have some sort of protection and there wasn't much of anything built in, that's for sure. This was all part, of a wastewater treatment plant that was a facility sitting on a river and was a state-owned facility that was connected to the wider state network through some sort of a WAN connection. At that time, it was probably frame relay, just as you were describing.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation about trying to secure these IP cameras in my last position, and it was just, they had this remote access software to view the video, and it just, we could never get it to work through the firewall. And you would call the company, the quote, I'm making air quotes here, technical support staff, and they just they had no idea of how to get it working through a firewall. They had no clue. It seems like, I mean, from my perspective, when I read these reports and about what's going on, you know, I don't actually work that much at all with ICS type of equipment, but I'm fascinated by, I don't understand what it's going to take for that, for these companies to understand that they're just not doing what they need to do.
Well, I have actually some additional horror stories to share with you folks.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. About 4.5 years ago, myself and my cohort from SCADAsec, Jake Brodsky, we did some analysis of some IP addresses of several Rockwell PLCs that were directly connected to the internet. There were about 4.5 dozen of these devices, and they were part of a water district based out of the southwestern region of the United States, not identifying the location. This was a small water district utility. They serviced less than 120,000 people, but in that region of the country, that's a very large, expansive area, probably talking several thousand square miles that they serviced. Most of these devices were controlling pumps, actual pumps, water pumps, flow pumps for the actual water district. And these devices were utilizing a wireless controller connected to an Ethernet to serial converter, and from there control the PLC. And this is how they did their maintenance.
Yikes.
He pointed this out. We got a contact name for the water district. Jake called them up, since he works for a water utility back east. And they didn't even know that their equipment was even exposed. Worse yet, they did nothing about it. And we did a follow-up a year later, tried calling them back, and they still continued to ignore us. Many of these utilities are financially constrained as to how much activities they can do. And as such, for them to make such a modification would require maybe an engineering design change. It would probably have to go before a board. If there is or any form of financial outlay, meaning if it goes beyond a certain budgetary level, it has to get approved by the board, and then it becomes highly political, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So as a result, many of these utilities don't bother making these changes. And the many water districts, the smaller ones especially, are very hesitant about it because of the fact that they lack financial budgets to service this. Case in point was the recent Springfield so-called hacker attack.
Right, right. I was going to bring that up.
The pump itself rusted. Why? It's cheaper for them to replace the pump after 5-10 years and just let it rust itself out rather than perform regular maintenance. It's actually cheaper to replace it.
So, Dale, you do assessments, right? Isn't that what your company mostly does, is assessments of this type of environment?
That's probably our biggest our biggest service we offer.
And so, I mean, in my mind, I mean, it's like what Bob was saying. I mean, I can understand and appreciate how difficult it is. These guys don't have a lot of in-house knowledge. They, you know, there are a lot of hoops to jump through. They just got to keep this stuff online. In my mind, I kind of blame the manufacturers and the vendors more than the organizations, the utility companies themselves. Are you finding them any more responsive than the utility companies?
Well, I think the vendors will provide what the utility customers demand. There's a long laundry list of things that people want in these products, and whatever gets asked for the most will be there. So you can kind of point your finger both directions. If the customers were demanding it, then it would be in the product. A lot of the space just kind of wish that this problem never came up and wants it to go away. You know, they get very upset when these things get brought up. If I could just maybe spin off something Bob said, he's right. These small to medium sized organizations running control systems have a really tough time because they have very limited resources in terms of people. I mean, the same guy responsible for the ICS is probably responsible for the email server as well. We tend to deal with the larger, more critical infrastructure companies because, quite frankly, they're the ones that pay for security services. And they're typically not connected to the internet, but they are connected to the corporate networks because there's a great deal of value in providing this process information to ERP systems and other things, preventative maintenance systems, a variety of them. So they're not air-gapped. And if you go back to what Ethan said at the very beginning, he said, you know, what we kind of did was just try to keep the bad guys away from these systems. Unfortunately, even if you're a utility or a chemical plant or a pipeline owner and you really care about security, you're kind of stuck in that mode because these protocols, whether they be Modbus or Rockwell's protocol, Ethernet IP, or the European protocol, Profinet, they have no security on them. So people can turn things on and off, make things go faster or slower, actually even change the application logic like Stuxnet if they can get to the network. So it's really difficult now, and it goes back to whether it's the vendor's problem because they didn't offer these basic security functions, or the utility's problems or customer's problems because they didn't ask for them. But you're really stuck in this weird thing now where if you're an owner-operator, you have to – all you can do is keep the bad guys out, maybe hike up your recovery capabilities and hike up your detection capabilities. You really can't protect these networks today.
I want to add one more thing. Sometimes you got to keep the bad guys in. I was talking to Tiffany Rad. I don't know if you saw her presentation last year on prisons and jails using SCADA with PLC. During their assessment of several different jails in the area, in the region, they identified wireless access points that were open, no encryption, and direct access to the control system, and also the ability to spoof PLCs and SCADAs to throw jail cells open. And other things. So SCADA is also being used on the other side to keep bad guys in, too.
See, this just really... I work in a PCI DSS environment now, and so you have these auditors who come in, and the auditors in PCI DSS are like the boogeymen, right? And your biggest fear is to have something that's in scope not be right. So you spend constant effort all the time, you know, self-auditing and checking and jumping through hoops and verifying. And because you'll get fined or you could possibly, you know, lose that approval. So I don't understand, why isn't there anything like this with ICS, SCADA, with utility companies? I mean, has there been discussions about that?
Well, there is in the electric utility, in the electric sector in North America, they've tried this with the NERC CIP or SIP regulations, and it's been a quite a failure in terms of actually improving security. It becomes more of a documentation exercise than anything else. It's one of those things where I think everyone would like it, but when you say, okay, now you draw up what you think the perfect system would be, it becomes quite hard. From our standpoint, we've always thought that the key to getting this is for the C-level executives to actually understand the risk that they're assuming, because once they do that, I think that's what would drive the situation. And they're starting to go down this path with some of the requirements that the SEC is putting on, that you talk about the cyber risk that you've got. Because if you have either an event or you have cyber risk, then you have to put that in your SEC filings, and then that raises the issue up to the C-level executives. So I'd say in our community, there's a lot of proponents for regulation, but then when you say, okay, actually, what would you do, that becomes a much harder question.
Yeah, I noticed sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I noticed that to support that, I mean, we've seen DHS actually create a toolkit called Security Evaluation CSET, which is specifically a tool set to help the engineers in the organization understand what industrial controls and other systems and how to connect those systems. So that was one thing. We've also seen NIST being responsible to implement 882, which is the NIST special publication, to try to create a set of controls. And just recently, they rolled those controls into the 853 version 4 to attempt to create a standardized method of applying SCADA and IT controls across infrastructure. But, you know, as you said, a lot of executives aren't doing it, and the FCC and others are Federal Trade Commission is getting involved to try to force the executives to take some action.
Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe the problem is because ICS controls so much and they don't know where to start. I mean, but the thing to me is I don't understand how much scarier it has to get. I mean, there's Stuxnet, Dooku, Flame. I mean, how much more has to happen for people to start understanding that this is really serious at that level?
If I could interject here, I think part of the problem that we're facing as a community here is the SCADA and control systems community are now where the IT data processing community was approximately 25, 30 years ago. As such, we're in the infancy of trying to establish security metrics within this community. We're warbling. Part of the problem is there's no unified metric, that a security metric standard that can be applied upon. The closest thing, and I think Mr. Klein will agree with me, is NIST 853 as well as 882. However, 82 is a guideline. It's not a requirement, and it's not considered necessarily a metric by some people's standards, depending on which industry you're in. Secondly, the other thing is that from a unified perspective, one size does not fit all. For instance, case in point, SCADA security measures or countermeasures implemented in the water sector are not going to be the same as applied in the energy sector, are not going to be the same applied as in the petrochemical sector, are not going to be the same applied in the transportation sector. And as such, there needs to be some level of uniformity between those major sectors, but in the same sense, allow for differentiation for uniqueness for their own specific industrial infrastructure sectors. And that still seems to be something that policymakers are still wrangling with to this date. Henceforth, reasons why they kind of jumbled up both IT and OT together and created cybersecurity.
Have you seen the PT Security paper that came out last month from Positive Security? I actually have some interesting notes about it. Number of detected vulnerabilities has increased 20 times since 2010. We've seen 50% of the vulnerabilities allow hackers to execute code on the systems. 35% of the exploits have vulnerabilities already. 41% of the vulnerabilities are critical. It just goes on and on. We'll put in the notes a link to this, but it's a very interesting report about a EU organization that has tried to do analysis around this. By the way, Europe has approximately 54% of their SCADA systems and 39% of the United States, North America, systems are vulnerable and have some exposure on the internet. That's a pretty large community.
Well, in complement to this, I believe it was Positive Technologies.
Yes.
You're talking about the Russian company, right?
Yes.
One of the things that they also identified, too, was they guesstimated somewhere between 30 and 40% of these devices are directly connected to the internet. Depending upon which region of the world you're in, I find that number to be a little bit high. I think the number is probably closer more towards somewhere between 15 and 20%. But the interesting thing is based on what we're finding through the SHINE project, through extrapolation of data off of Shodan, we have still yet to reach rock bottom. We're still incorporating data from Shodan as a result of it.
Have you seen that Shodan cheat sheet that they just released?
Yes, I have.
Well, let's go back a second and talk about Shodan. I that was something I had put in the show notes. About in the agenda about discussing. I mean, so Shodan basically is an online project that presents. It's a search engine that lets you find specific computers, routers, servers, etc., that are available on the internet and that are vulnerable. And in addition to that, one of the particular things that that is available is it shows ICS systems that are accessible over the internet. So, I mean, how do you and Bob feel about this? I mean, do you think the Shodan project is a good thing? Do you think it's dangerous? I mean, you hear different people come out on different sides of this issue.
Well, this is Dale. From my perspective, it's definitely a good thing. I think sometimes it's misreported. And I've had this argument with Aaron Leverett, who's done a lot of work, and I've talked to Bob about this. I don't believe that most of the true critical infrastructure is internet connected. But there's a tremendous amount of ICS that are connected that are, you know, maybe smaller municipal businesses, building automation systems. As I mentioned, you see a lot of crematoriums on Shodan and that sort of thing. So it's a big problem for those businesses. And it's really a great program that Bob and others are doing to find these systems, pass that information so that those owner operators can get notified and wise up and pull these things off. But Bob understands the statistics much better than I do.
I guess that's my cue to chime in. I work, again, very closely with Dale, as well as Aaron Leverett. There's another researcher by the name of Sean Merdinger, who's based out of Florida. He does a lot of freelance research on this as well. I don't see Shodan as necessarily being as nefarious as policymakers make it to be. The way I look at it is this. It's sort of like Shodan, in comparability to this analogy, it would be sort of like a gun manufacturer. It depends on how you use the gun. If you're a bad guy, you're obviously going to use it for bad purposes. The same can be said for lawful purposes. Realistically, if Shodan didn't do it, someone else would. If they didn't do it for good or neutral purposes, someone else would do it for nefarious purposes. And do know that since Shodan has been out there, I'm sure that the bad guys are equally creating their own little databases, much the same way that I am on our end. We have, myself, Sean, Arian, and a few others, have purely voluntarily created our own little database of various searchable terms that nightly I go through an ingestion process and harvest information from the Shodan engine. We have, to date, 647 search terms. Not all of them, would I say, are specifically what DHS would acknowledge as industrial control systems, and for sake of simplicity, the reason why they shrunk it down is to make it more manageable so they can notify the necessary asset owners. And like Dale had pointed out, I would agree with him, the larger, more critical infrastructure-sectored organizations, you won't find their devices directly connected to the internet. It's the medium, the smaller ones, the remote locations 300 miles in the middle of both USA or Canada or where not, that you're going to find these devices. Many of these devices have long since been forgotten. They just continually operate and occasionally spit out data here and there. What we have found is a large plethora of serial to Ethernet converter devices, I would say close to 50,000 between four different manufacturers. The SHINE project has been going on since middle of April of 2012, and we again have yet to hit rock bottom. We presented our findings to both DHS as well as to Public Safety Canada, and they are both notifying their appropriate asset owners in both countries. We also have countries such as Japan and Austria now asking us for the data, which then we've been directing them to DHS. The interesting thing is that what a lot of people don't understand is you think, okay, well, for instance, I want to look up something specifically on Siemens. Look up Siemens Somatic or Siemens Somatic 7 or PLC or something of that nature. Depending on what type of search term you use, you may end up having to use an aggregation of multiple search terms to look for or hone in on a specific device, at which point in time, you know, congratulations, you will find maybe a dozen or so of these devices. You're not going to find a large quantity, and every month, for instance, with Siemens Somatic PLCs, I think we find four, maybe six of these devices. They're tertiary devices or secondary devices for rudimentary functions that are considered non-critical by many of these infrastructure organizations. However, one thing that a lot of people don't quite understand is that the IP addresses often associated with these networked devices usually are not associated with that organization, are associated or affiliated to the ISP. For instance, here in the United States, in the western region of the country, and Dale pointed this out as well, and I'm going to throw out a product name. There's a company called Motorola. Their product line is called Raven. These are point-to-point wireless devices in either the 5 gigahertz or 8 gigahertz range. These are typically 5 to 50 watt phased linear amplified antennas that are point-to-point, mountaintop to mountaintop, and they're used to control devices in very remote locations of the United States. There are hundreds of these devices that exist out there. Chances are they are probably controlling something of an automated nature. The problem is you have no idea what is being controlled because the IP addresses belong to Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, US West, what's the other one, Cox. If you're up in Canada, it's either Rogers, Bell Canada, or TELUS. And if you're overseas, you know, it's the various ISPs there. And part of the problem also is you don't know if any of these IP addresses have been dynamically addressed, meaning that they've utilized DHCP to identify them and the IP address range ages out, and then they get reassigned a new IP address, maybe within the same range, but not the exact same IP address. And as far as Showdown's concerned, it counts as a hit. The other thing also is that Showdown is also flawed in the fact that they're looking only for IT-based ports. So in this case, port 21, port 22, 23, 80, 443, I think 5060, which is VoIP, 161. I think there were a few other ports that John Matherly had identified as well. I asked him if he would consider looking at port 502, which is Modbus, and they're a little bit concerned because the problem is, unlike the other ports where you can just look at the header that says, oh, yes, this is running a web server and this is the name of the web server running there, when you access a Modbus device, you actually interrogate the device. And depending on which country you're at, that could be considered a form of digital trustacy.
Oh, my God. So how much is the media blowing this out of proportion? That's one thing I'd like to know. I mean, we see, okay, there's, of course, Stuxnet, Dooku, Flamer. There's the recent report of the hackers supposedly breaching a heating system of a New Jersey air conditioning company. There's the stuff about the Niagara AXICS system made by Tritium. So we're hearing all these different reports. I mean, I could go on ad nauseum about some of the stuff. For example, the water plant pump that was reportedly accessed by Russian hackers, and it turned out it wasn't. I mean, what's the real threat level here?
Well, if you've noticed, the majority of the vulnerabilities, I actually compiled some statistics just from DHS ICS CERT alone, and Dale can probably confirm this with me as well because he's been gathering his own form of statistics, is I would probably say somewhere between 70 and 80% of the majority of the vulnerabilities that are being reported out are IT-based vulnerabilities. Things that pertain to FTP sessions, connectivity sessions, web-based sessions, Java-based sessions, Java scripts, cross-site scripting, memory leaks, things of that nature, things that are typically associated and affiliated with traditional IT enterprise systems. The networked portion of it. Very few of these systems deal with the protocols specific to these control systems. Recently, there was one that was actually quite heinous, which dealt with Rockwell's Ethernet IP protocol. I'm not sure what they're going to do to fix that, because the problem is this is now affecting all of their products at a protocol level, and I don't know if there's any fix for that at the present time. But for the other stuff, that's all low-hanging fruit, and that seems to be the majority of what you see.
I mean, but should we be concerned that that's like a way in?
That is a way in, but it's a way that can also be patched as well.
Okay. But because they don't tend to do it, right? Because it's because of the legacy nature of some of this, they don't see it as important, as the same level of importance as addressing the PLC, maybe. Is that possible?
You're on a roll. Keep going. There's other reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you get these systems installed. It's like anything. Nobody wants to touch it because it's working.
That is very true, and I think even Dale will agree with me. Many of these places, these systems are black boxes. In some places, they say, don't look at it, bunny, don't sneeze. You know, we're concerned that, you know, the whatever regulatory body is not going to get their data, and the last thing we need is to get a $10,000 fine. No, don't say anything.
That comes around to the whole vulnerability disclosure process. It appears that some of these vulnerabilities have existed for 7 or more years, and the vendors have not taken any action to patch a lot of these things. And I noticed on your website, Dale, you changed your vulnerability policy, which I really do like, to give the vendor time to actually fix the problem. But if it's not disclosed, if there's no timing for these products to be patched, are these vendors actually patching these products?
Well, our policy actually changed a little bit. I don't know when you looked at it last. About a year ago, our policy changed to, we'll do whatever the heck we want to do. So we do a different thing on just about every one. Some we report, some we disclose publicly, some we work with the vendor, some we send to ICS Cert. But I don't think the vulnerabilities actually are that important. And if you look at that positive technology report, or Sean McBride from Critical Intelligence, I think did an even better presentation on that, looking at the last 10 years. He called it the lost decade.
Right.
You don't need a vulnerability to completely take control or take out a control system. You just use the features. There's no need to find a buffer overflow or some other type of vulnerability. You just send it a legitimate command. And what you're seeing, I think, on the vulnerabilities is more an expression of interest. So this increase in vulnerabilities is saying that there's a lot more researchers looking at this, and the systems were designed without a security development lifecycle. Think Microsoft 1999, 1998.
Exactly.
So I think it's interesting from that point. You know, people are becoming more aware of code quality, but from an actual threat point and impact, I don't think most of these vulnerabilities don't matter. The pros are not going to use them. They're going to use features.
Let me qualify this a little bit. You're saying that the way these systems are designed, that it's more down to separation of duties, that once you get access, you could just use the system the way it's built, and you have ownership. It's like getting root on a Unix box.
Well, especially the field devices, the PLCs, the RTUs, and those sorts of devices. They don't care who sends the command to make a change. They don't care who sends the command to change the ladder logic or the application logic that changes the process, or even the firmware. I mean, you can send all zeros firmware and brick the device. It'll say, okay, let me load it. There's just no security on these devices.
So they're not in the applications themselves. You're saying they're not setting up levels of access. They're not setting up they're not separating out administrative access from different types of access. And that's what you find to be more disturbing, that it's not, that the application itself isn't even designed well to do that?
We've used the term more than vulnerability now. We say these are insecure by design issues. They're not vulnerabilities. They're working exactly the way the vendor designed them to work. They just chose to, you know, live 20 years ago where they were air-gapped and where nothing bad was ever attempted. That's just not every system, but, you know, 90% plus are that way today.
Wow.
If I can make another comment on this that will actually also support Dale's comments. One of the other issues that they're having within the SCADA security community is in terms of not only disclosure, you have that you as an organization have to consider liability issues. Many of these organizations are public organizations. Some are privately owned but publicly traded. I don't know how this works, but the big concern is that if a vulnerability gets out that identifies, you know, XYZ public utility, you can watch their stock prices plummet, and many of them are afraid about that. And so some researchers, as a matter of fact, I think Joe Weiss pointed this out at his recent conference, there was a vendor that threatened to sue one of these public utilities, unfortunately it was not here in the U.S., it was overseas, that if they had disclosed the vulnerability and disclosed the circumstances that led to this to the insecure by design based on the manufacturer would have reported loss of sales on their product, obviously, because the product's not secure. They threatened to sue their own customer. Now, try figuring that one out.
Yeah, but you also have the issue that the Federal Trade Commission is now pushing back to a lot of the executives. Yep. Which is called the artificial inflation of stock prices based on lack of disclosure of security vulnerabilities and not taking adequate risk steps to mitigate that risk. And we're starting to see a lot of discussion of this in the policy wonk community that is now starting to create presentations to the executives of both the companies like Rockwell and the PLC SCADA community devices. And we're also seeing it to a lot of the electrical authorities and publicly traded organizations. Just want to mention that.
Well, aren't they taking this a lot? I mean, I noticed that the NSA is getting involved and that with the Perfect Citizen program, is that serious or is that just some hot air?
Oh, it's serious.
So once, I mean, in my mind, once the NSA starts getting involved, where they're, and the program is, for the listeners, it's it hunts for vulnerabilities in large-scale utilities, including the power grid and gas pipeline controllers. And they just put out a document, a framework for assessing and improving security posture of industrial control systems. I mean, once at that level of organization gets, governmental organization gets involved, isn't this putting all these guys on notice? Don't they need to stop twiddling their thumbs and pointing fingers and actually, do you think, or is it going to take something worse than the NSA getting involved?
It's going to take something a lot worse. It's also going to take more stringent regulations and requirements of those regulations to get many of these public utilities and critical infrastructure organizations to take note. It realistically, depending on what type of industry you work in, both the electric sector and the water sector are both heavily regulated. EPA controls the water sector here in the United States. And depending on which type of public utility you are, if you're in the transmission side or on the generation side, and even on the generation side, there's a lot of overlap. For instance, most of the dams out west are controlled by FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, but there's some overlap with NERC. And if you're obviously a nuclear, then the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, comes into play, and it's, everybody wants their hands in the cookie jar. Part of the other problem is trying to decipher some of the requirements. And I think, in my humble opinion, part of this is you have policymakers that are trying to put a finger on or a direction in terms of where to go, but they don't know where to start. And it's back again to what I've stated before about uniformity of metrics. Dale, would you agree?
Well, I have a hard time when it comes to regulation. I guess I'm much more focused on if someone wants to do the right thing, if a company says, I care about security, and we're lucky enough to work with some that have been working on this for 5+ years, can they buy a system today and deploy it in a way that has a reasonable level of security? And unfortunately, the answer to that is no. So I almost we're focused so much on the utilities and the end users of these things. I would really like to see more pressure on the vendors to deal with these insecure by design issues. And then it's up to maybe the executives to accept the right level of risk. And I'm not saying that end user regulation is impossible or a bad thing. I guess I'm a little less optimistic that would make a difference just based on the NERC-SIP experience.
I think I tend to agree with you just in general. I mean, I don't have a lot to say about this particular subject, but my feeling is a lot of times these guys aren't going to know what they need. And a vendor, if it's insecure by design, okay, then you're duct taping everything just to make it safe. So I'm a little bit, personally, I've been appalled at the vendor's take that, and I continue to see this not just in this industry, but in others where, you know, you shouldn't be waiting for us to tell you. I've never understood that mentality.
Yeah. Let me put a question out there because I'm listening to this conversation and hearing that a lot of the controls are insecure by design. Doesn't the worst case scenario for some of where this equipment is deployed, doesn't the worst case scenario provide an impetus to make a secure system? It strikes me that the nature of what is being controlled with SCADA tends to be infrastructure related. We're talking about the power grid, we're talking about nuclear facilities, we're talking about waterways, things that if a knowledgeable person were to be able to gain access to systems and send, if I'm understanding correctly, unauthenticated control sequences, they could have a significant impact on the surrounding area, including the life of people in the area, in a worst-case scenario. Is that overstating it? And if I'm not, why wouldn't that be a driver for security to be paramount in this environment?
Mostly because of the fact that we as humans have short-term memories. A lot of people have forgotten about Three Mile Island back in 1978. And many people have forgotten about Chernobyl, you know, bringing up two, or even Fukushima for that matter. You know, the part of the issue is that it's an issue for a couple of years after an incident has occurred. If you ask anybody right now about the Springfield incident from 2 years ago, they go, what? Seriously. Ask around and ask people about the Springfield Water District, what happened down there, and people will come back and tell you that, I don't know, some hacker broke into a water district.
Well, the same is true with the Northeast. When the at the end of the report about the power outage throughout the Northeast, they discussed that they had malware on the internal system controlling the grid.
Yeah, I think that the industry is very resistant to change. That's not a revelation. But even the quote, industry leaders have been much too reticent to point out the problem. I mean, we haven't had a statement from DHS or anyone in the government saying that critical infrastructure needs to replace these insecure by design PLCs in the next, you know, you pick your time frame, 1 to 3 years, 1 to 5 years. All we hear is, you know, don't let bad guys get to them. There's no leadership on that. And, you know, I even call out, not always very popularly, but I call out the ICS security experts oftentimes because they will just say this is a really long problem. It's going to take 10 to 20 years to solve. And with the level of risk we're accepting, it seems to me to be a little cavalier to say we're going to live with this for another 10 to 20 years. But you know, I can't say they're wrong, but if they're the ones providing the guidance as to what needs to be done, we really need people to step up and say this is a serious problem that needs to be addressed in the short term, not the medium or long term as it's currently being approached.
Well, Dale, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the problem is that we're seeing a lot of lobbyists hit Congress up to slow this whole process down. It was interesting. I sat in a conversation at a hacker conference a year and a half ago when one of the major vendors, several vulnerabilities were disclosed for this one major vendor. Well, when it was done, the group of us walked off and were discussing it. The vendor was very angry, yelling at us and claiming that they didn't have the problem. And they're completely in denial many times. But even worse, that we didn't really see the vulnerability show up until this year. So that was a while to give the vendor time to do anything. But apparently this vulnerability had been responsibly disclosed for 2 years prior. But because there was no impetus on fixing it, they didn't do it. But in addition, I heard that they had policy. They had basically people in Congress, lobbyists pushing back, trying to hold them not accountable for this, and also trying to slow the whole process down.
Well, Dale, is that what's your intention? So you have Project Basecamp, and you also have the S4 Security Conference. Do you want to talk about a little bit about those endeavors and how it sounds like that's your way of getting making a shift happen in the industry?
Well, it's our attempt, at least. You know, Project Basecamp came after 10 years of frustration. You know, we looked at after 9/11, we were actually seeing demos. You know, Bob mentioned Modbus. We were seeing demos by Eric Byers and others showing how the lack of security, the insecure by design issue, could allow someone to manipulate a PLC. You know, they did that at multiple conferences in 2003, 2004. Nothing changed. 2009, we at our S4 conference, we actually showed how you could load rogue firmware. Think of an ICS worm into a Rockwell Automation Control Logics device. But we kept it quiet because the genie wasn't out of the bottle. But now with Stuxnet, I think all these people that before maybe, you know, maybe the cybersecurity guys, the engineers were saying, hey, we can do this, but governments weren't really listening. That's all changed now. Now I think if you look at the help wanted ads out there, governments are hiring people to develop offensive capabilities. So once we said it was out of the bottle, you know, we said, what can we do to push this forward? And Project Basecamp was our solution. And very simply, it's not high-level hacking in any sense. It's we set out six PLCs to a variety of researchers and said, you know, show the problems and develop Metasploit modules to demonstrate it. So, for example, with the Schneider Modicon quantum device, you can actually do a Stuxnet-type attack. You can upload your own ladder logic to change the process. Other modules on GE and Rockwell will allow you terminal access so you can do whatever you want. So our approach was to show not only in a conference setting, but actually provide tools so that owner operators, consultants, and vendors can demonstrate how serious this insecure by design issue is, with kind of the hope of getting new secure models out there that then people who care can choose to buy and upgrade. That was kind of our approach.
I'd like to make a comment also supporting Dale's approach on this. Not all vendors are bad. Some are better than others. For instance, Siemens and GE, in my humble opinion, are one of the worst in terms of acknowledging vulnerabilities. Case in point was the recent vulnerabilities to their Rugicom networking switches and Ethernet to serial converters. Rugicom was purchased by Siemens earlier this year. Prior to that, they were their own self-sustained company. And part of this is, just simply put, they hope that people go away. Other companies like Rockwell, I find them to be fairly proactive. They do listen to their customers a lot more. I'm not saying they're any better than Siemens. It's just they tend some areas they do tend to be better than others. Some of your smaller companies, there's a lot of specialized manufacturers that exist out there. They're even better than the big ones like Rockwell and ABB and GE and Siemens. A lot of it comes down to who you also talk to as well.
Well, I'm after being thoroughly depressed by the conversation, I'd like to know, what do you guys expect? What are your hopes for the next few years moving forward with this issue?
I think one of the things we can expect to start seeing more of is more secured processing. The insecure by design is gaining attention among most of the vendors. But more importantly, the vendors themselves utilize communications protocols that are inherent, most majority of them, not all of them, but majority of them are inherently insecure. I think we can expect to start seeing more communications protocols, such as the Distributed Network Protocol, DNP, version 3, which offers secured authentication as part of its overall encapsulation of communication to these remote devices. By default, many of these devices don't have security enabled. I think what we're going to start seeing is more of these devices where the security, where there will be low to mid-level security features enabled by default, where you will see the use of SSH connectivity as opposed to Telnet and unsecured FTP versus secured FTP connectivity being implemented on many of these devices. Dale?
I guess I have a couple of predictions. I've been thinking about this, obviously, since it's that time of year. I think one thing we're going to see, it was mentioned, this New Jersey HVAC Tritium hack that happened. I think you're going to see a lot more internet-connected systems getting hacked by automated malware. So these things that the vulnerabilities that people are finding will be put into automated tools combined with internet searching, and that's going to be a much more common story, I think, in the near term in 2013. I am cautiously optimistic that we're going to see some improvement on the insecure by design over the next 2 years. For example, the Ethernet IP group, the responsible for that protocol, has started a work group to add security to it. Siemens has come out with a new line of PLCs to replace the S7 that of Stuxnet fame. So we might start to see some things there. And the first step is to have these available. And maybe a third one is, you know, we hear a lot about cyber war and we haven't talked about it a lot. But I think you're going to see most organizations, most countries and non-governmental organizations that do these sorts of things develop attack code for the popular systems. So, for example, if you were going after refineries, there would be three different systems you'd want attack code for. That probably represents 90% of the market. And then maybe what hasn't been talked about is I think these systems are going to get, this attack code is going to get pre-staged. So a lot of countries are going to be trying to identify the systems they may want to attack in the future and try to get their attack code on those systems. And we're going to start to hear stories about that attack code being found in the next 1 to 2 years. I guess that's my three.
Yikes. Joe, what
Well,
do you
the
think?
Two of you summarized everything except a very disheartening trend I'm seeing, and that is that the management systems, there's a big push by many of the vendors to push the management systems into a cloud environment, which, as you probably understand, the cloud community hasn't done a very good job of securing their infrastructure, which will compound the complexity and of the security process, but also simplify the attack vectors. But as far as new protocols, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the people on this call actually focusing on this. This was one of the problems that have to be addressed, which is the ability of enough researchers to get out there to tell the story before we actually see any fixing of the technology, just like we did with Microsoft. Microsoft was in denial for many years until they were beaten down eventually. The problem with it is now we have lots of Microsofts at different levels throughout the community that are all going to have to be educated about this particular class of problems. So it's going to require a lot more of us. The other thing is now that from a next generation standpoint, after reviewing everything from microwaves to televisions to all the Internet of Things, these companies are going through the same process. The ability to compromise many of the things that were non-traditional. We see that the DOT is implementing or requesting the implementation of internet backhaul, which also connects into the CAN bus, which is on vehicles and on everything from satellites to back end for nuclear systems, which is very similar to CAN bus or very similar to Modbus. We're seeing a lot of that occurring. So I think that we're going to also see, in addition to code being found, we're going to see code being found within these systems that are also compromised and prepositioned.
Well, I mean, I have hopes because I remember maybe 4 years ago, you'd have one SCADA talk or one ICS talk at a conference. And now it seems like there are 10 or more. And while it's a little scary, it's also, it makes me optimistic that people are focusing on this so it'll be addressed and we won't be surprised. Nobody can say that nobody talked about it.
And then also seeing whole conferences around this topic.
Yeah, I
think security professionals, not just people in the industry, high-level managers.
Yeah, I think, Dale, I applaud you. I applaud your podcast and the work that you're doing with the S4 Security Conference. Bob, I like what you're doing with Shodan and Shine. I think this is great that you're this isn't the sexy stuff. you know, a lot of people are still pretty clueless about ICS and SCADA systems and what's actually happening out there. So it's not like you're going to wind up on the front cover when somebody, as opposed to somebody doing the latest cell phone hack or Android hack, but you know, it's really good work and it's important. So I really thank you for what you're doing and I appreciate you. Same here. And I appreciate you being on the show and discussing this with us because I've learned a lot from it.
Well, thanks a lot. I enjoyed it.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. But before you exit the Healthy Paranoia Hideout, make sure to have your License to Kill updated by Q. I hope you can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers or join our agents on IRC at Freenode. Visit packetpushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers Secret Service, subscribe to our RSS feeds, join our new underground forum, and donate to the show because those armored vehicles get quite pricey. Email your comments or questions about the show to packetpushers@gmail.com or healthypAranoia@packetpushers.net. And remember, diamonds are forever and you only live twice, but it's healthy paranoia because sometimes they really are out to get you.